Friday. Bring it in, True Zoom from Quarantine Show with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe and Henry Abbott. How are you guys?
Good.
Listen. Gerard, do you want to invite me on the show to do like the most urbane, like mature academic topic we've ever discussed? And I just ruined it by in the little pre-show making everybody talk about alligators for the 50th time.
Listen,
and now we're just children.
This is an alligator in Coach Thorpe's neighborhood, which, you know, that is a big mother effer. All right. I want no parts of that.
I may have been wrong when I say 9 feet. Yeah. I didn't ask. It's two doors down. I don't know where it is now. It's probably gone, but.
I've mentioned this show before. Look at Judy. It's fine. I've mentioned this show before. I don't know if it's still on. It's ongoing, but it was on Animal Planet or one of those types of shows. It's called Growing Up. No, wrong. It's called like Family Gator or Gator. It doesn't matter what the name of the show is. It's about this family in Florida and they're gator catchers. Like, that's what they do. So when you go to you're in your home and you're like, oh my God, this is 20 foot. You call these people. Mm-hmm. They come out and they get the gator and take it out far away from where you live. And it's a family affair. Dads, sons, brothers. Oh yeah. And the daughters too. Hilarious story. Frat house calls. We got to get the gator out of here. The daughter showed up for this one. And the old macho guys are like, what are you guys going to do? How are you going to get that gator out? They're like, yeah, don't worry. We got this, bud. Like, and the two girls got into the pool, pulled the gator out. All good. It's a beautiful thing.
So, you just need like a roll of tape, right? You just like jump on the thing, wrap it up. You know, David, you do this all the time.
Exactly. You jump on top. it's easy. See, Judy, it's fine. It's fine.
It's not just gators in the wild kingdom that we live in here. I have like a 100-year-old tree in our front yard. It's humongous. And until recently, where there's so much moss, you can't see it. There was what I thought was a very large beehive. And wild bees are Africanized. They're not killer bees. They're just a little wilder than the bees that my parents grew up with in Florida. But you know, kids play in the yard or whatever. So this thing's 60 feet in the air. And so I had a bee family, not a gator family, Gerard, a bee family. This is what they do. Yep. And it's good business. They got bees, whatever. So I knew it was bad when he came out with his truck. I pointed to him way in the air where the thing was, and he got his mom and his wife and his three kids and their dog all to get out of the truck to look at the beehive. We haven't seen it like this before.
Yeah, that's how you know.
Okay, Drew, this is why one of the things I like about the gator topic is there are two Floridians we love that are integral to this show, right?
Correct.
And what happens is when the gator topic comes up, just like every kind of intelligence operation, obfuscation, change of topic, like diminishing, like every, there's a whole playbook. And they use all of it. It's just a big show. David's like, bees. Like, no, David. Bees, we were just looking at a photo of a 700-foot-long dinosaur that's going to eat your dog probably today. And you're talking about fucking bees? Like, what the fuck? Like, how is this? What's happening? The reason we're worried about the gator is because it's so blatantly terrifying.
I'm way more scared of bees.
Look at Judy, but also Cuban food. Let's talk about that. It's brilliant. Yeah. Henry, that was a brilliant observation of the tricanery that Judy and David pull off. Cuban food. No, it's fine.
Before we leave the topic.
Within seconds of David texting that photo, Judy sent a picture of a sunrise. Say, but Florida also has this.
Florida, something for, see, here we go. Something for everyone. This is Florida. It's a beautiful place.
For our gator fans out there, you have to watch the Dio Hughley concert where he's back in Charlotte. It's one of the greatest all-time movie concerts. And he has this thing of gators that you will cry of laughter. I don't want to blow any, just got to watch it.
He did it again, Henry. He's making comedy out of it. Oh, it's so funny.
Well, and did you notice? Like
three in 20 years.
Right before the show started, there was a story that we talked about where a woman was killed by a gator in Florida.
Was it Florida?
Check me on this, but I'm pretty sure this happened. And at the time, the reaction I heard was from, I think someone like, oh, it's only the 26th time or something like this. Like. And they just brought up, and then David said, I'm pretty sure that was Texas. But it wasn't Texas. I'm telling you, it wasn't Texas.
I know a gator ate someone in Louisiana during the floods of the hurricane last week. Wasn't Texas, it was Louisiana. No, you don't swim. Listen, the first thing I tell every visitor from out of America that comes to work with me, because there's lakes everywhere here, you never swim in anything but a pool or the Gulf of Mexico. You never swim in a body of water. I told it to Henry the first time he came down. Like, do not think that lake looks appetizing. There's something in there that might eat you.
Okay. Yeah, I was literally in Florida to interview Tim Donaghy, and stressful day of my life. This was going to be the first interview he did with anyone out of prison. And I stayed in some hotel somewhere near David, and he calls me and he's like, oh, like, you know, how's your run? I'm like, oh, good. I went for a run. He's like, basically, you went for a run? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, by the water? I'm like, yeah, right by the water. And he's like, oh, okay.
Just don't swim in a body of water.
Listen, man, watch out for swampland. That's all I'm saying. Just watch out for swampland. That's all I'm going to say. All right, guys, look, I wanted to have Henry on. Well, for number one, it's Henry's show. I mean, this is true. Henry's
saying, is not a prize.
With me? Try
it. With me, exactly.
Friday.
I know you love it. So we do this awesome thing, a True Hoop, right, where we put out stories about all different kinds of things. And it's, you know, we like to call it here capital J journalism and all that. So earlier this week, we talked about Ben Simmons and Coach put out a piece. And what's so beautiful about the NBA and trades is the fact that the money has to work, right? The salary cap leagues. You can't just be like, I'm trading player A for player B. No, money has to work and all that. And we go a step further, as Coach does in his piece. The money not only has to work, but it has to make sense from a basketball perspective, or else why are we doing it, right? Now, this wasn't reported or anyone told us anything. We just said, money works, and this would be smart for both teams. And Coach ranked them in terms of order of what he thought was, you know, reasonably smart. By the time he got to the end of the piece, the last few teams, like the Brooklyn Nets, he's like, well, this would work money-wise, and it would work basketball-wise, but it would never happen, right? Okay, fine. So then what happens? Someone picks it up on the internet. And Judy, you can start playing the series of tweets. So here we go. Talking NBA picks it up. Here's an idea, right? Simmons for Kyrie by True Hoop and Coach Thorpe. Okay, whatever. Next tweet. Somebody picks it up and they say, oh, Nick Wright, what a unique trade idea with the three shruggy emojis. Oh, but you see, now what happens? Some NBA news from Blue Check Nick Wright. There are a handful of Kyrie trades that potentially made sense for the Nets. Kyrie's agents made it known that if Kyrie would simply retire from the NBA if Brooklyn were to trade him. All right. And then Kyrie says, you're a puppet, blah, blah, blah. And it's this whole back and forth thing. And then Nick says to Kyrie, we both know if you're saying you didn't say it, you'd retire if you were traded, then your beef is with your representation, not with me. You and I both know that's what they told people. He's like, you don't even know you're a puppet. He's like, look, the puppet doesn't even know he's a puppet is what Kyrie says. And sure enough, it was the lead topic on Nick's show the next morning.
Wow.
Folks, I want to say all that to say, this is the playbook that is used in media these days. Someone says something, right? Like Coach Thorpe, right? Again, we didn't say it was happening. We said money works and, you know, it would make basketball sense, but it would never happen, right? Very clear, would never happen because we didn't report it. Nick Wright picks it up, says, interesting. And now the machinations work. And I want to add a little caveat here. As you know, I'm close to the Brooklyn Nets in terms of sourcing and whatever. I reached out. Person who picked up on the phone laughed. What are you talking about? What? That's not a thing. Knew it wasn't a thing. Just wanted to confirm. Thank you very much. So that's not an actual thing that's happening. But Nick said, ooh, this would be a great idea for my TV segment. Because Kyrie's going to yell at me on the internet, which he did, puppets the whole nine. Right. And now it's a whole big talking point. And guess what? NBA Twitter is going nuts. And I wanted to have Henry on because with his experiences, with what happened with Damian Lillard earlier this summer, but just in general, Henry does what I always call capital J journalism, right? Like he has actual sourcing and sources and anything we put out there, you know, we didn't make it up, right? Multiple someone told us this thing is happening or going to happen. And then we report it. That's the difference between what Henry does and what we do here versus TV, which is entertainment. And by the way, nothing wrong with entertainment, but you know, if you want truths and real things, I think you got to kind of know the difference. And I think that's the danger part that we're at in society, right? Sports is low stakes, but it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, ultimately this doesn't matter. But in COVID and like actual real things that affect lives, you got to trust who you know people are telling you things. So that's why I wanted to have Henry on because he can talk about this in some more detail.
Yeah, though that was interesting. By the way, did you see the little news in the chat from our friend Devin?
We're breaking news right now.
Breaking news right now. Devin runs that Talking NBA account.
Love it. I love it, Devin.
What Devin did. To be clear, I love what Devin did. Yeah. Talking NBA. That's the whole point. Perfect. This is how you figure stuff out. You talk. Right.
Exactly.
That's right. Not what Nick did. Go ahead, Henry. That's not what Nick did.
And David's point was, I thought, brilliant, which is, first of all, we think Ben Simmons could be traded for an infinite list of packages of players, blah, blah. And he was kind of like, no, really go and look around and think about what the 76ers need. Think about what Simmons wants. Like, there are only eight trades, only eight teams that really could even offer an appropriate package. And then he added, like, and by the way, this Nets thing would be good for both teams, but it won't happen. Right. That was his take. And like, it is true. Like, I actually think, you know, there some people on Twitter reacted that way. They're like, you know, look, the Nets could really use Ben Simmons, like the best defender, perimeter defender in the league. Like, yeah. And he's 25. Of course they could use him. Anyway. So yeah, there's a thing happening here, which is not new, which is basically like when I was an NYU journalism student, we're getting all this NYU's heavy on theory, media theory, Neil Postman, amusing ourselves to death author. Like, he's big on just like exactly what you're talking about, Gerard. He was like, he wrote the book on like, we're going to amuse ourselves to death, right? As we're learning about what journalism's supposed to be, we're walking by the newsstands of 1991 New York, and it's just freaking tabloid city. It's like the early days of Rudy Giuliani. It's like everything is told like a comic book. And I'm here to tell you, I think it's absolutely fine. You can consume whatever you want, however you want. You can get all of your news. Like I was telling Gerard, LeBron just signed some deal to create original content for Clubhouse. You could make that your only news source, and that's fine with me. I don't care. It's amusement, right? It's whatever. It makes you feel good. It's fine. If, however, we want to get into like what matters or what's true, then I think as a consumer, you just have to handle things way more judiciously, right? You're going to get lied to. People would love to lie to you, right? So the New York Times, I think on Tuesday, had a little story about a bunch of former CIA and NSA hackers, programmers got in trouble for hacking against the USA for the United Arab Emirates. Like, it was on page like 14. I didn't see it mentioned anywhere. And I'm joking a little bit, but like, it's because it didn't have Reese Witherspoon in the story, right? Like, there was nothing for a regular person to like read and just think like, ooh, seems like it matters. Or I right over there is the 500 page novel, The Overstory, which is about like trees. It's about fucking trees. And basically they're like, here's the moment that we destroyed the planet when some bulldozer approaches some redwood on some day in the 80s. And like, and now the mudslide that it causes, we're all screwed, blah, 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 tipping point for the planet. And no one even knew that it happened that day because it's not a very interesting story. It doesn't have Reese Witherspoon in it, right? So to me, I'm like, what really matters is very different from what makes a good piece of content today. What makes a good piece of content today is going to have big names. It's going to have Kyrie. It's going to have obey your master, like his emoji said or whatever. It's going to have like sexy, emotional things. What matters might be very different. Climate change is like the pinnacle of this point, right? But I think there's just like, that's what matters. Right, your house is gonna flood.
Right? Way more important.
Paying attention to fucking Reese Witherspoon. like it's okay, but like you can, but don't pretend that you know what's going on, right? And like, and with the finish now, like with the Dame thing, it's like, you know, like he has a gazillion Twitter followers. He made an exciting moment by being like, baseball emoji. This is a bunch of craziness, right? But when I talked to him and when I talked to his agent, like, that's not what it was like, right? It's like, there's a little bit of like, no, behind the scenes, the way the NBA really works, the way climate change really works is like a lot more subtle and a lot more difficult to discern. And frankly, Twitter's primary crisis is I think it's just only emotional things work. Mm-hmm. And being emotional isn't a very good way to get like enlightened or whatever, right?
I think, I can't speak for Dame, but my guess is he just doesn't understand why you hate Reese Witherspoon so much.
Why what?
Why you hate Reese Witherspoon so much.
I love Reese Witherspoon. Let's not get that confused. Like, yeah, totally.
I was trying to be like everyone else. Your point on Twitter, of course, is right. I've even written this a couple of times, Henry. When I engage on Twitter with people, I try to treat everyone like we're at a dinner party and we're going to be respectful at a dinner party. No one's going to go to me and call me an idiot and a moron and facepalm and all that stupid shit. If we're talking about basketball, they might think if I say a movie's good, they might make fun of me if they're friends with me. But if they're not really friendly with me and they just know who I am, they're not going to be rude. Unfortunately, we lose all that on Twitter. And but I think to Gerard's point, I have no idea what channel Nick writes on. This is just all content for him. It went from a really good discussion and with Devin asking that question, I really think, as Henry alluded to, it is an interesting, in theory, the Nets get the best defender on the planet that isn't Rudy Gobert, a brilliant passer to play with Harden and Durant, two of the best scorers we've ever seen in history. Oh, and Patty Mills. They have a bunch of guys. Joe Harris. He doesn't want to shoot, but he can dunk the ball, typically. And he's got to work on free throws, for sure, or he won't play in the fourth quarter. But they're already pretty good without Kyrie Irving, as we saw this year. So having Ben Simmons and not playing the fourth quarter, they'd be fine. It's a good discussion. It's a better discussion. Is Kyrie really the best match for Joel Embiid? I think the Nets would say yes faster on paper than the Sixers would. But that's not how Kyrie Stan would handle it. And Nick would just build it all up. It's also silly.
And I think that, you know, again, Henry, and Coach, you're 100% right. And Henry, you made the great distinction, right? Content versus actual news, right? Like when you are on TV, which is what Nick is, you're in the content business, right? People have eyeballs and people need to tune into my show. What's going to your point, talking about climate change for 2 hours, snooze fest, nobody turning into that. Oh, Reese Witherspoon says, oh, I'm watching that now, right? Like, and again, and Nick in this way is brilliant. He knew doing this thing about Kyrie was going to get the piece of reaction that he wanted, because Kyrie is a polarizing person just by nature. And then he devised NBA Twitter, right? Like, and it's, he knew it. This is brilliant. And then the whole Kyrie, you and I both know, right? And the back and forth, which, you know, people like the mess. Our good friend Ethan Strauss says this all the time. Like NBA Twitter and the emotional piece of it. We love the drama and the back and forth and all of that stuff. People love this stuff. And it was brilliant from a content standpoint. But again, to Henry's point, and all I always want to say to people is make sure you know what you're doing. Again, if you want to be entertained and that's what you want to watch, knock yourself out. But if you want actual credible information, you got to do a little bit more diligence than turning on whatever those channels are.
There's one little twist to this, which is so having spent a decade being like, basically, audiences should read this New York Times article on page 14 and not the New York Post, which is perfectly designed to be fun. Like that's a stupid hope. It just doesn't happen that way. It's not gonna happen, right? So then honestly, eventually we get to like the True Hoop Presents team, where basically what I'm saying to like the assembled group is like, hey, you guys know what's going on. You know what's happening today. We need to use emotion. Otherwise it won't be popular. So like, we need to tell the stories where like there really is like a character in struggle who's going through something, and like, and we narrate the emotional changes of it, like, and we shattered traffic records, shattered them. Like, because it's like this page 14 story was not well written from the point of view of actually making someone give a shit, right? Like Hollywood could probably make a movie of it, but it'd be a different writer, different approach, different, like, so we might need to use those, some of those tools, but it's different from like, in this case of Nick Wright thing, there's nothing there, right? There's a fun observation of a basketball insider who doesn't think it's really has any chance of happening and just uses like a grenade to just confuse people from what is actually happening. It's like, well, that's just you don't have to follow any of those things. None of it matters, right? It only matters if you want to participate because you like NBA Twitter. Now you get to be an equal participant with Kyrie and Nick Wright. Maybe that's fine, right? Like, but if you're not in that hobby, like, just go about your day. Do stuff you like doing, you know?
Like, do you, really? Was Kyrie suggesting that it wasn't true that he would just retire if he was traded?
Well, I mean, that's what I assume he was intimating with that. But, you know, Kyrie can't just say that, right? So to Henry's point, like, Kyrie's like, oh, well, I'm now going to have fun too and play, right? So instead of just saying Nick falls or whatever, I'm going to use the marionette and the puppet strings and call you a puppet. And like, it's just, this is, it's the economy of, right, it's the game. Yeah. This is, again, that was a whole, I don't watch that show and I don't know, but someone told me it was in the entire, like a block of the show or whatever block was that, right? It's multi minutes of just nonsense, but it works because eyeballs. That's what you want. That's the candy, right? That's what people want.
Like Kyrie and Damian are both like, in by some measures, bigger media entities than Nick Wright or True Hoop, right? Because they have so many social media followers. Mm-hmm. Once you're in the position where you can kind of control the message, like Donald Trump taught us, a pretty good message is fake news. Yep. It's all fake news. Mm-hmm. Everything that isn't me is fake news, right? And that's what both Damian did, the face on emoji. Kyrie did the you're a puppet. Neither of them addressed the facts in any way, shape, or form, right? Like, They just said, it didn't come from me. It's bullshit, which is like, that's a luxury of being in a position of power, right? Like you get to just say everyone else is fake, right? And like, so Kyrie didn't, doesn't make Kyrie look good that he's on the brink of retirement, right? NBA fans don't want to hear that. So rather than getting into a protracted debate about that, it's just like, you're a little baby, you're a little marionette. You think, that's all I
said. and then the response, the puppet doesn't even know he's a puppet. I'm like, oh God, this is like.
Hey Henry, do we know if Nick Wright even reads our stuff?
Oh man.
No idea.
I doubt he read that article, or he would have commented differently unless he was just looking for content like Gerard suggested.
No, David, come on. He's got a show to fill.
Yes.
Like, just creating.
Completely disagree. Hard disagree.
So you think if he had read the article and where we wrote that, no, this is not going to happen, you think he still would have responded to Devin Sweet, as it turns out, Devin, you instigator?
Yeah.
And yeah.
Like, I don't know. Content. Yeah. Because Kyrie's that's the fire. It's, ooh, this is the person, right? Because he is that's the thing, right? If this was some rando, no one's going to care about this person. Kyrie, people are going to care about him.
David, the whole, this is a reason maybe not to watch like too much cable news, right? Like is, because Nick Wright's, the real math of his job is, if you understand anything well, it has the emotional pitch of like the McNeil Letter NewsHour, right? It's like a 2 out of 10 on excitement.
Yes.
Right. Your comment was a 2 out of 10 on excitement. It's an interesting idea, but it's not going to happen. Like if you misunderstand it because you're going too fast, it's a 10 out of 10 of excitement. And he needs 10 out of 10 every fucking minute of the show.
Yeah.
Right. Or else he's going out of business. So like he doesn't have time in his day to go, oh, Nuance defeated another interesting piece of content. Like, no. He's like, fucking, we can light this thing on fire? Fucking light it on fire. He's like, yeah, that's how TV goes, man. flammable.
We have to light things on fire. But that's television, though, right? Unless you're not watching. Like,
yeah. TV viewership behaves like rubbernecking. Right, it's like,
yes,
how big is your car crash? It's like, better be a fucking big car crash. Like, that's how TV viewers act. I don't even really blame TV so much for that. Like, it's just, you just go out of business if you do like McNeil Letter NewsHour. You just do.
I mean, not gonna lie, McNeil NewsHour, that had some quality things. I definitely found some interesting things when I watched that every once in a while.
Yeah,
it's a little dry, but you know,
oh my god, it's like. How long was this toast in the toaster?
I mean, sometimes you're like, this is like eating paste. Like what is happening here? But you know, but that's what happens when you get super intelligent, like, you know, but nobody wants that shit. I want light it on fire. Gasoline, way better.
Cool. All right, Joe, I told you I could do this in 5 minutes. It's only 23, so pretty good.
I knew that was gonna happen. Well, so now you just stick around because we're here. So NBA will not be mandating vaccines for its players. I don't think that surprises anybody, right? I mean, with a union, that's an impossible thing to pass, right? I mean, I just don't think about it. The NBA had a bubble in Orlando that had zero cases of COVID, right? Literally none in a county at the time. And coach, correct me if I'm wrong, where COVID was raging like out of control, right?
Yeah.
Zero inside after that bubble. And for reasons that are relevant for very good and not, the players and the players association said, no, we're not doing that again, right? So when that happened, how are you going to actually get them to mandate every single person taking a vaccine? So I think it'll be interesting to see now with the rules, right? If you're vaccinated, you're not subject to the testing requirements as you are if you're unvaccinated, right? I think that'll be interesting to see. And then what the reaction and fallout's going to be. Because look, these guys go out and do things, right? If they have an encounter with someone and they do and now they got to be in quarantine for 7 days and now they miss 2 games in a row or whatever, right? How forthcoming a team's going to be about the reasoning why so-and-so is out, right? That'll be interesting. Our team's going to use this as a way to load manage. Because, you know, coach, speaking of Brooklyn, we always talk about, those 3 guys, 50 games is why all they should play together. Well, is this a way to kind of be like, well, maybe we'll use this to kind of hide so-and-so and not have them play 10 games or whatever it may be. So I think this is, it's more than just, all right, not everyone, we can't mandate it. I think we're going to see some interesting things around how teams use this. And I don't know how honest they're going to be about saying why someone's out.
Henry did something. So last June, when I first said, I think the Lakers are going to win a championship, and I gave all my reasons why, I didn't say something that Henry insightfully mentioned, which was, so I gave him reasons about basketball only, identity and Frank Vogel and LeBron and AD. And Henry said, but also you have got to have a really tight ship in this bubble. You're going to lose a player. This is a year ago. Again, Orange County was bad. My daughter lives there. And he's like, LeBron, this is where his OCD really works. And he, because the reason why I even mentioned Henry is if he had said, Dave, you're out of your mind. It doesn't mean I wouldn't have written it, but I would have had at least give more thought to why I came up with this thought. First of all, the Lakers were great anyway, like it was a crazy thing. But I wanted Henry to say, you know, it makes some sense. When he told me what he said, what his thought, I like, yeah, fucking Lakers definitely winning this thing. And so to your point, Gerard, on how a team's going to handle this, that's where my mind goes to, is how they can handle this as a team building function. If you've got some players that don't want to take the vaccine for whatever reason, and there are people that can't take it or won't take it for reasons I'm not going to get into, because I don't know. But everyone has that right to some degree, because they're worried about themselves. So how do you manage that? Do you make sure, I just read what Judy put up there, you have to take a test twice on game day and once on the travel day. But a team can say, we want you to test every day. They can say that. We just don't want to take any chances. And then what happens if we have a cancellation or two or five? Will the union pivot? I wonder about that too.
My main thought in seeing those stories was, I'm pretty sure that it was reported that 85% of NBA players are vaccinated. Yep. I think the NBA might have even shared mm-hmm. that.
Yep. The NHL is like at 90 something. So NBA is just below that, I think. Yeah.
And I know, so CJ McCollum is the new president of the Blazers. Mm-hmm. They were 100% vaccinated. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why the fuck didn't this pass?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
how does 15% control 100? Like, well, what the, how's it happen? What happened? There's a story there.
I imagine who the 15% is. Okay, we have ideas about who we think are not vaccinated. Let's just say of the non-vaccinated NBA players, I believe that they are megastars. And we know megastars,
sure.
Megastars control the league.
Yeah. Like,
that's, we know that.
But when they're passing the CBA, it's one man, one vote. Like,
true.
I'm really confused. I'm curious. As someone who's interested in the power and mm-hmm. how power works, like, how'd they do that?
Yeah.
A league where almost everybody got the vaccine, but like refused to require the vaccine, is kind of amazing.
Aren't you guys, I'm guessing yes, curious as to why? What is preventing athletes from wanting to get vaccinated? And why hasn't the league, and maybe they have, why aren't they sending, you know, brilliant doctors?
Well, you know,
and these players are used to talking to doctors anyway.
You know what's so interesting about that, Coach? And there's a story that was done on the Spinsters podcast, which is done by Haley O'Shaughnessy and Jordan Liggins. And they talked about the HIV issue that happened back in the 90s when Magic tested positive, yeah. Right? And so the league, and in this episode that Haley and Jordan did, they interviewed the doctors and the epidemiologists and people who they sent out to the league to talk to players about what was happening, what not to be afraid of, and what was, you know, again, science. What is factual and what is fiction? And it's a theory that, I mean, it's not even a theory. Like, think about when we were any age. What are the worst ways in which to educate a group of people, generally speaking? Large conferences where you all just sit there and we talk at you, right? It's just terrible for a number, and particularly a culture like the NBA, where you've got, you know, guys in their 20s who think they're funny all the time and, like, you know, make jokes about, oh, the reason I can't use condoms is because they won't fit me, and like stupid things like that. And it's like, no, that's not.
Wait, what's going on there?
in that story, there were guys who literally, because doctors were like, look, use condoms. Like, that's a way to prevent, oh, the condoms won't fit me. And the doctor's like, what are you talking about, dude? Like, that's not a thing. Like, I don't know what you, not a thing. Like, trust me, there's something that fit everyone, right? Regardless. But that doesn't work, right? So can you get these guys to get out one-on-one with them, right? Because there's also the embarrassment factor, right? Of raising your hand in front of your peers, asking a quote-unquote dumb question, right? And then everybody's snickering and laughing, and then the text blows up. Can you believe so-and-so said blah, blah, whatever. They're just like us. It's the same shit that regular people go through. They do the same thing, right? Can you get one-on-one conversations with smart people to talk to them and assuage whatever fears they have? Because ultimately, that's what it is. It's fear and honestly not knowing, but being afraid to say they don't know, right? Because that's the other thing people are afraid of. People are always afraid of looking stupid, right? So they'll never say, I don't know. They'll just sit and nod and, you know, whatever.
And you, like, Absolutely, John. I'm sure you're right. I'm sure there's like a sort of social lever, right? And also, you don't want your doctor to come from your employer.
Well, it's also that.
Right? Like NBA players with their injuries and whatever, like going back to the beginning of time, right? Like if it's a personal decision, like, you know, you just, you wouldn't want it from, none of us want that, right? None of us want that. Like, so I could see that the meeting would just be like, hey guys, like, why don't we all agree to get vaccinated, you know, unless you have some giant reason to keep each other safe. But let's just not have the NBA involved.
Yeah.
Like,
we can get our own people.
From them, right? Like, let's have it come from us or your heart or your doctor or your family member who's sick or whatever. Like, just don't choose based on your employer. And I would respect that. I get that.
100%. Yeah. There, you know, the NBA had and NFL had a similar thing, right? So Mike Freeman, who writes for USA Today, covers the NFL, and the woman who discovered the vaccine at Moderna, she talked about this. And she said, look, we're done. We're past the stage of eliminating COVID. No, that's not going to happen anymore. We are going to live with COVID like we live with so many other things. That's the thing going forward. You know, ultimately it'll be like the flu, where every year there's going to be a new strain, new variant, and there'll be boosters and every year that someone will take. And then we'll see, maybe every year like the flu, 50,000 people will die from COVID as opposed to the 650,000 and counting numbers that we've had over the last 18 months, right? That's sort of the place that we're at. And, you know, the question about, people said, well, how do you feel about going to stadiums and places and you're not sure about the vaccination population? And she's like, it's a risk tolerance, right? It's like the thing you do every day. Every day you make decisions about, should I do X or Y? And whether you realize or not, you're making a risk calculation, right? Oh, I'll probably be fine. So if you feel comfortable and you know you're vaccinated, we still recommend when you're in an unsure setting, make sure you're masked, 6 feet, all the things that you know you should be doing. But that's kind of where we are. And I think to your point, Henry, like the NBA guys, they can reach out to whomever they want, right? And get any person to have and come talk to them and have it be off. Listen, this league, the players can do so many things clandestine that we'll never find out about, right? Like, you can do it. So if you really want to know, you can find out. My fear is of that 15%, how many of them are like, they're firmly entrenched in their opinions because they've done their research and I'm good. And it's like, well, we know what that is. Research, that's not research. You got some anecdote from some friend of a cousin or whatever. And now,
or Nicki Minaj.
I was trying not to talk about swollen testicles, but I was like,
But it's not, and they're, you know, that's half of America or close, yes. Right? A third of America, right? Like it's going around.
Yeah.
The there's many Atlantic teams, but one of the ironies is, these players have such a scientific-based life. It's not like a neuroscientist because they play basketball, but there's a discipline, there's a craft, there's an adherence to rules that they follow for their bodies, for their games, their building of their craft, their skills. I would think they take it like an alligator to water.
Oh, wow.
Comes back full circle to alligator.
I think Gerard's point is brilliant. I think it shouldn't be a big group into a team thing. It is, hey guys, here is 8 different doctors we've identified, 20 different doctors, whatever. Here's their cell phone numbers. If you have a question, we don't work with them. They have no connection to the NBA. They're just considered as brilliant as they can be. Text them and say you want to talk. Have them text your doctor. If you trust your doctor, have your doctor text this guy or this woman and let them talk it through. And then if you still don't want to do it, that's fine. But I mean, my parents are old, sadly decrepit people now. They don't move great. They're combined 161 years old as of next 2 weeks or so.
Oh, combined ages, David. That's not nice.
I mean, I'm 56, so obviously my parents are in their 50s. And between them, they have 6 vaccines. And they're fine. Like, they can do this.
And your point, Coach, this is also where privilege comes into play, right? You have that privilege. The average person cannot call their doctor and say, hey, I want you to go talk to epidemiologist X and this person. Text them and text them. They're like, dude, get lost. But if player X in the NBA says it, 100%, it's going to get done.
They could get Fauci to make a house call.
Right.
LeBron could.
Sure. So anyone there who they have the ability to get the information they want, right? And like that. So they needed to use it and do it.
The Sixers sports scientist from a few years ago, Dr. David Martin, was telling me that basically, like, they have a ton of tools workout regimens, recovery things that like some people find useful. And if you believe that they're useful, they're more useful. Like those Normatec pants, for instance, like mm-hmm. NBA players love them. It's $10,000, but like the data is actually not great. Not super convincing. And that's which is true of practically every recovery product. But if you really believe in it, then your brain does things to your body, makes you better. So the way that he would handle that, which I thought was kind of brilliant and applies here, is they would say, you know, finish practice, like, hey guys, look, here's 8 to 10 things some people find handy. If you want any of them explained to you, here's the staff. If you want to take one home, go ahead. And they walk away. And now the only person who'll end up using any of them is someone who believes in that thing. They chose it, they're into it. Mm-hmm. And what they don't put on the table is stuff that's like totally bogus, right? It's stuff that like gonna hurt you or from some quack doctor or whatever. So they put like, you know, stuff out there, and then the players either buy into some of them or they don't, but they have a way to reach it. I feel like you could maybe do a similar, this is kind of what you're describing with the with doctors
and kind of stuff. Excellent point.
Let's just hope we don't lose any games.
Well, right.
I mean, yeah. Let's hope no one gets sick.
Yes.
And then also let's hope we don't lose any games.
This correct.
It's going to be a fun year. It's a wild season right now.
I mean, yeah,
a lot of talent.
We are literally a month away from meaningful basketball. Like literally a month away. October 19th, first game. Yeah, unbelievable, right? Crazy, unbelievable.
And less than a month with meaningless basketball. Yes, pretty, yeah.
Correct. No, better than nothing. So speaking of basketball, it was reported by The Athletic that John Wall and the Rockets are going to try to work out some deal because he ain't playing basketball in Houston this upcoming season. So how are we feeling about this? John's got, I want to say, 2 years or 3 years left on that deal.
Two.
Significant money, too.
40-something million.
40 million, yeah, yeah. So per season. Yeah, per season. So a lot. And he had moments this past season where I thought he looked fine. You know, is it, what's the market for him? What do we think is feasible for Houston here?
Listen, I've been wrong before about thinking guys going to be almost impossible to move, and they've always been moved. But I'm right there with this one. I did the same thing that I described to Henry that I did with Ben Simmons and Bradley Beal. I went through the whole league. I don't see a deal for him.
Yeah.
I mean, if Daryl Morey is faced with not having Ben Simmons at all, then John Wall is better than air. But guys like Daryl Morey, they don't take players like John Wall.
Right.
They don't
right.
take those contracts like that. I don't know that any team can take him until next year. If they take a buyout, it's a year away.
Yeah. I think the money is, and it's not because every contract is tradable. It's not that it's the timing right now. How do you move it? Right. Because who's going to match salary wise, number one, and if I decide I want him at that money for two more years, like what am I giving up and what's he coming to? Right. What environment does that work in? And to your point, there is no work because any team that's got young guys at his position, they want them to develop. Well, if you bring John Wall, they ain't going to develop because you're going to play him. Right. So, and if you can't buy him out this year, then what? He's on the Houston Rockets bench all season. This is a strange situation.
Hey, Gerard, what do you think of this with him? If so, Houston wants to, they have a youth movement, right? They have Kevin Porter Jr. and Gerald Green, but it's 82 games and it's 48 minutes a game, not including overtimes. There's absolutely every reason why they could have John Wall play. He can come off the bench. They could go with, you know, three guard lineup if they wanted to. They're reporting that he's this incredibly gracious person. I'm not saying he's not. He can't wait to be the leader behind the scenes, but he won't play or you won't play him. It's weird either way to me. It doesn't hurt those young guys to play with a high IQ player. He knows what he's doing. He's a very good player. He's not the athlete he once was, and the injuries and all of that. But is it just because they want to keep losing?
I mean, that would be another thing, right? Is that like if you want to continue to lose and tank, and if you play him, like that means winning basketball, right? Like, I mean, he's a veteran now, so he's gonna want to. Maybe not. You think you can play him and still lose?
Probably right.
I think he's expensive. I think he costs Tillman Fertitta money. I think that's a concern.
The broke boy, Tillman Fertitta.
I mean, the trade that could happen, I think the kind of trade that could happen in a case like this is, hey, give us a lottery pick and we'll take him on the Thunder or the Knicks or whatever. Well, not the Knicks anymore, right? But that's the kind of deal that could happen, right? There are a couple teams with big cap space, but I don't know if...
Right, but why would they do it? Yeah, the Thunder could take him. Trade exceptions work, but why would they? Why would you want a player making that much money that doesn't really advance your agenda?
You get a lottery pick. That's what I'm saying. This is the point. You think you need a lottery pick.
Right.
Oh, and, so you take him with the
guy. Yeah.
Okay. No, that, yeah. I mean, so if you're Gerson, not Gerson Rosas, God, wrong name. If you're, Rockets GM, why is his name escaping me?
Rafael Stone.
Oh, yeah. If you're Rafael, like, is that worth it to you? The pick to get off that money?
I am 100% certain that both Sam Presti and Rafael want that pick, like, more than,
for sure.
They love that pick more than their children. And they're both just like, this is the fight, right? I'm sure the phone calls happen. And I'm sure that they're not going to, like, budge on this one, right? Like, right. Yeah.
So we'll have to see. We'll have to see where this goes. But this is an interesting one for sure. Really quick, Aaron Gordon re-signed up in Denver. 4 years, 92, if I'm not mistaken, as reported by Shams. His agent is Calvin Andrews of Clutch Sports. Look, so we talked about this on last week's show, right? So now with Gordon, Murray, Jokic, they've already got significant money committed. And the MPJ extension hasn't hit yet, right? So, I mean, with those four guys alone, that's going to put you into the tax just with those four, right? So, you know, if you're Denver and you're the Cronkies, are they still the owners of the Nuggets?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and they have more money than Jesus. Yeah, sure. Do you want to, are you cool paying tax for a team that may win a championship? Maybe. They're around. They're a contender for sure. I don't know.
With Jamal healthy, they're a contender.
Yeah. And we don't know. And
he's out. He's out. Yeah.
We won't see Jamal till spring, probably, is my guess.
Right.
At the earliest.
Right. Exactly. Exactly right. He may not make it to the playoffs even. We don't know.
Henry, yeah. Someone's going to have to take a loan from his. This is the beauty of True Hoop, right? We give fans a little glimpse into the money, where the money comes from for these guys. Listen, Fertitta, we know he's got dark money for sure.
I literally told you I couldn't be on the show today because I'm literally working on something about the UAE, and then Greg, I have no idea if that's possible, what Greg said in the chat. I don't even gonna say it out loud because it probably gets struck down by
Exactly. Yeah. Let's not mention anything that has to do with the UAE. Nope. Moving on. Ben Simmons, coach, what? All right. So the latest, right? He's still training camps here a week. What's going on? Do we think he's going to show
couple
up?
Couple things. I was told yesterday that I was told from someone inside the Sixers team that the players were all saying, oh, he's coming back. Like, Daryl Morey's not trading him. I'm paraphrasing what they're saying. Until he comes back. And then I found out that there was an article written saying that, which is where I think the players got that from, is they read the article. And then at 6 o'clock this morning, I listened to Keith Pompey on his podcast with Locked In. And he's one who broke the story that Ben Simmons told the base of the Sixers brass face to face, I'm not coming back. And Keith is sticking to that story. So you've got a little debate here of what the Sixers are saying to people, what people are writing about, and then what Keith is saying, what Ben and his agent have said. The other part of this is Daryl Morey has to be sensitive to the fact that there's no one that's going to be able to do a deal with him and think they can win the press conference, because Simmons is getting destroyed on Twitter. And it's to the point now where, and Henry knows, and I was tweeting about this yesterday, like Sacramento Kings fans are saying, no, we'd rather have De'Aaron Fox than Ben Simmons. And they're outraged that I would even bring up the trade. It's fine if you think you want to have Fox going forward. Even though Fox has never made the playoffs,
right?
Simmons has been in 34 playoff games, has won three series and lost two game sevens. And he's just 18 months older than De'Aaron Fox. But they're outraged at even the idea that you would trade for a third-team All-NBA player. This is what it's come to. Ben's means something. The fact that whoever does the deal is going to have to rejuvenate his image is a worrisome thing for these owners.
We talk about like how best to optimize your chances of winning a championship, but not a lot of billionaires think that way, right? Like, they're a lot more like, how do I look good today? We know stories about billionaires like wanting to improve their dating life, like, right? Like, so losing the press conference is not a small thing, right? Like, this is actually a reason that a lot of teams just won't do it, right? So this is a, you know, Sixers fans, like, don't go so hard on Twitter about how terrible Ben Simmons is. Right? Yeah,
that's not helping your cause. You're not helping your cause.
So true. Yeah, you're not helping yourself at all. Right. Mm-mm. Really call like wildfire. Yeah. But here's the thing. For anyone listening to us, anyone, we'll have sober analysis when it happens. Whenever a deal happens, we will have sober analysis as to here's why the two teams did this. Here's what projects like going forward. We might be wrong, but we won't be way wrong. We'll see it pretty good. And that's what the smartest executives are doing. They're going to realize in the long run, we have to do what's right. We'll figure it out.
And we here at True Hoop, we're high on Simmons, the three of us. Like he's 25 and he's uber talented.
Yes. He just turned 25. He played as a 24-year-old all season.
Right. Yes. We know the one glaring thing. We know that. But all the other things matter a lot. And again, right environment, all that, you're getting a gem.
And actually, this is like, I don't want to sound like I think that advanced stats are the be all and end all, but very useful at a time like this, right? Mm-hmm. On Twitter, the notion is like, well, I think that one of the tweets from the hellfire of the Kyrie thing was basically like, you know, like Kyrie's perfect and Ben Simmons can't do anything.
Right.
Like,
not true. Well,
what's happening there is like, these are highlights of scoring, right? Like by that measure, that's true. Kyrie has hit a step back three to win a championship. Ben Simmons passed up a wide open dunk, right? End of analysis. But I think in fact, there's a lot more to the game all over the court, all stuff happens, blah, blah. And by that analysis, like, you know, I think it comes down to like, well, I looked up those two in earned wins on dunks and threes. Kyrie's like around 10 a year, Ben Simmons around 80 a year, right? Like that seems about right to me, you know? Or in terms of just like, you know, per minute, you know, Ben Simmons is about the 25th best NBA player by that measure. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to tell you that I think I would trade him for everyone 26 and down. I'm here to tell you like his real value is somewhere around there, which makes him spectacular.
Yeah.
Right. Not probably Damian Lillard. Right. Like it's, you know, he's not at the level of some of these players who've been in the conversation, but when you get to De'Aaron Fox, it's like, you got to really think about it, right? Like you got to, it's not.
De'Aaron Fox. Absolutely.
And I love De'Aaron.
Yeah. But De'Aaron, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, right.
Again,
right. The numbers are helpful for that. Just sober it up a little with like, you know, well, what does he really contribute? It's quite a lot.
I think to your point, Henry, that's right. If you're someone who's like, all right, I want to know about like advanced stats or whatever, just he's a 25-year-old all NBA and all NBA defensive guy. They don't grow on trees. That's not let me just go get one down the street. Like, no, like that matters. So yeah, guys, pay attention.
And then over the course of his contract, the next, you know, he has 3 more years. Is that right?
Yes.
Over those 3 years, whatever team he plays for will win a certain number of games that we could kind of roughly attribute in those stats to him. Like that number is going to be higher for him than almost every other player we've mentioned. Cause almost all the other superstars are old and they're going to go down, you know, like, it's like he's gonna win a lot of games for somebody. He just is. I'm like, if you like that, well, you gotta consider this guy.
For years, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's got his year 25 season coming. By the time Jordan hit year 25, he had won exactly one playoff series. I tweeted this yesterday, and had been swept twice.
DeAndre Jordan.
DeAndre Jordan. I mean. We all knew he was an amazing scorer, but I'm old enough to very much remember those days. And I was a gigantic Lakers and Magic Johnson fan. And Jordan was just a scorer. Like, you're not winning a championship with MJ. That's what the talk was, generally speaking, on talk radio.
Sure was.
Just a great scorer, you know? And a great defender, one-on-one type of guy. But you're not going to win. Look, he's only won one series ever. And because he's 24 years old. Like, Ben Simmons can get a lot better. He should. He has a long way. He hasn't improved in a few years. We can be critical of that. But I also would be critical of the franchise he's playing for. And maybe that's one reason why he's not going back. Because you've had your chances. If I'm his agent, I'm saying, listen, he played for the old regime, he played for the new regime, same guy. We need a change of scenery. And because you tried to trade him during the year and didn't hide it, and your head coach said he's not sure you're going to championship with him, we're done with you. Moving on.
Yeah, when you're when Doc said that, I was like, "Oh, that's not." Oh.
That's how Rich Paul reacted.
Yeah, I was like, "We are not going to be coming back to that team. That didn't sound so good."
You are not coming to my birthday party.
You're not coming to my birthday party.
You got to play your cards close to the vest.
Definitely not. All right, in the remaining 11 minutes, I want to get to this. Coach and I have some like rankings and things we want to do about some players, but I want to get this GOAT thing really quick on Substack, guys. So when we talk about GOAT, and we did top fives right here sometime earlier this spring. What are we actually talking about when we talk about that, right? Like, and I think oftentimes it's two different arguments people are having. Are we talking about the people who've had the greatest resume in terms of basketball? Or are we talking about with your eyeballs actually playing the game of basketball? Who are the greatest players you ever see do the thing, which is dribble, pass, shoot, all that, right? Like, and oftentimes those two things aren't quite the same, right? Okay. I mean, Robert Horry's won seven rings. Robert Horry ain't on nobody's top anything list, right? Like, good player, but like, you know, he's Robert Horry, right? Been a part of seven championships. So anyway, Kareem on Substack had a email conversation with Mark Stein, friend of the show. And Stein says, too often NBA's greatest all-time debates gets boiled down to Jordan versus LeBron. I know this bothers many observers who were old enough to watch you play. How bothersome is it to you to be excluded from the GOAT conversation? This is Kareem's response. GOAT discussions are fun, like debating who's faster, Superman or The Flash. It's a metaphysical mystery. The question can never be answered because players from the past were trained under different restrictions and played under different rules. Then you have to ask what to give more weight to, scoring, defense, assists, all of them. But the stats don't always reveal the particular conditions and challenges of each season. Way too many variables. How about we discuss GOAT, one of the greatest of all time? And I thought that was wonderful coming from Kareem, who, again, when we get back, if we get back to that conversation of, in terms of resume, if we're talking strictly basketball resume, I don't have to make a case. The case is already there. That is the greatest basketball resume that ever exists. Like the only six-time MVP, 18-time All-NBA, all-time leading scorer, on and on and all those things. Incredible. So I thought that was an interesting conversation. And Kareem, you know, he's such a fascinating guy. Like, his career post-basketball has even been just as remarkable as his basketball career. Just the stuff he's done in terms of writing and like not just about social justice and things that happen like that matter. The dude is get credits on like Hollywood stuff. Like he's a TV writer and he's incredible, incredibly smart and just a well-measured human being.
I think he should have got an Oscar nomination for his role in Airplane. if the joy I felt in my heart as a Lakers Kareem fan, and I saw that in that incredible movie, which back then was so earth-shattering. No one had ever seen a movie like that. It was one of the happiest days of my life.
Yeah, the kid comes in the cup. My dad says you're... hey, kid.
You're like, Lambeer around, whatever. Yeah, it was not Lambeer, whatever.
Walton. That was the best moment of Blazer history is that they mentioned Bill Walton.
Lanier. It was Walton Lanier. That's what it was. Yeah. That's so good. First of all, his logo. Do you see the logo on a Substack?
Yep.
Instead of an EEM, it's the 33. Brilliant.
That's cool.
Everything he does is gold to me.
I'm going to put on my editor who has to make money. So OGOAT is brilliant if it's people who love basketball and debate these things all the time. Now, if let's say I don't know much about dinosaurs. But someone says, like, this is the biggest dinosaur in the history of the world. Like, you might get me to the Museum of Natural History. But if you say one of the biggest dinosaurs, it's like, there's some debate or something? Like, I don't need to be part of this. Like, you know, like it's a pretty good dinosaur. Like, I'm not leaving my house for that, right? Like this is where, like, sports actually need to appeal to, like, 10 times more people who follow it.
Yeah.
And this is where, like, the GOAT debates, that's just how our brains work.
Yes.
Like, you know, you just want to go, like, this woman can sing at the highest note with the whole Guinness Book of World Records, all that stuff, right? Like, we have an urge to just make it all tidy that, right? And you're just, if you're saying it's, actually, Royce Webb used to have a rule, basically, you can't conclude any story with it's confusing or it's messy. Like, then what the fuck do we have you for? It was confusing before.
No, you're right. And I think, you know, it's something we talked about, Henry, if you're making a list, right? Forget about accomplishments. That's take that aside. Just in terms of playing the game of basketball, if we're making a top five list.
Yeah.
Almost nobody who played in that era would be on a top five list, right? Just because Jaren Jackson Jr. is infinitely more athletic than just about anybody that played basketball in the 1950s and 60s, right? Yeah. Like, that's just a fact. Now, his resume ain't nowhere near as good as someone like Will Chamberlain, obviously. But in terms of athleticism, you know? So of course he'd be better at basketball, right? Because look how much more athletic he is than these guys. So it's a very interesting thing that we, you know, that we debate.
I'm just taken with the humility part of it. Kareem, just the way he handled himself. This is a guy that in his late 30s brought his dad on the team bus before a big game against Boston after he had played really poorly game before. That's heroic. Athletes should know more about that story, that you don't have to be this, and I'm bigger and stronger than you. No, you can be smarter. You can be vulnerable and you can be open. And the fact they went to Pat Riley, I think you just said, I'm bringing my dad. I just have so much respect. And I will say, one thing I love about LeBron is very open about his admiration for the guys that came before him, as he should be, but he doesn't have to be, he is. And I think it benefits our players to know the history and to know guys like Kareem existed and the way they handle things now.
The one thing I do know, and we've spent enough time around these guys, particularly amongst the, I mean, all of them, that idea of the fraternity of the NBA, that's a real thing. Like that's a very, very real thing, because there's only so many of them who know what that is like to be a part of that particular exclusive club. And then amongst the greats, right? When you're talking about Kareem's, Magic, the reverence among that group is the whole other different thing, right? And that's the beautiful part of it that, like, you know, we get to see.
And I think, and in part because they feel under siege, right? Like the owners are creepy. They hate us, right? like the people, most of the people, like when you're in the NBA, you get off the bus, most of the people you encounter don't make you feel comfortable, right? Like, but who does make you feel comfortable? Like people are on the bus, right? Like it is a strange life. It's like being in the carnival. It's not that as fun as everybody thinks it's going to be. Mm-hmm. Everybody makes assumptions about how everything's easy for you. And I think it is kind of like, here's a guy. Honestly, I've talked about this before, but like Vince Carter, the year of insanity, maybe the day before the dunk contest was Saturday, probably Thursday or Friday, I got to be in the little back rooms of the hotel when he arrives, and Dr. Jack Ramsey's right there. And Dr. Jack basically gives him a hug and is basically like, how are you doing? And Vince is like, I just feel like I'm just running all the time. I just never stop running. And Dr. Jack's like, yep, like keep it up. And like, Vince is hurting. It's hard as fuck to be Vince Carter in insanity, right? And like nobody, everyone's like, he's so rich. You know, it's like, he's dragging his ass from this bus to that one. He's trying to dunk on you on the way. Like it's hard, you know?
It is hard work, people. I say that all the time.
We're not going to have time, Gerard. I want to hear your, you never said happy on this show.
Well, let's do it next week. We'll do that next week, but let's do our five though. Aliens. We can do that. We got time for that.
All right.
Aliens come to Earth, right? Or the Monstars come to Earth, and we got to beat them in basketball. Who are the five we're sending out to beat the Monstars? Coach, I'll let you go first.
All right. I think only one's going to be a surprise. I'm not going to go with a center, just in case their centers can handle the ball really good. my center is Giannis.
Okay.
My four man is LeBron.
Okay.
My three is KD.
Okay.
My primary guard is Steph Curry.
Okay.
And you're gonna laugh, but I'm going with Drew Holiday.
No.
I want to lock someone down, man.
I'm not laughing at all. So look, it's the fucking Monstars are hard, man. Like I don't know what the Monstars look like. See, if I knew what the Monstars look like, I could make my alternate cases.
True.
All right. So listen, you guys don't kill me. I mean, of course you know, KD is definitely going to be number one on that team. If we're playing the Monstars, Giannis, because he might be a Monstar himself. Exactly. All right, so. I want length and I want athleticism, right? So KD, Giannis. I want someone who you have to guard at 60 feet, Steph Curry. So we got three of the same. So my two, I went different from you. Look, the Monstars are going to look at Nikola Jokic and be like, what the hell is that dude?
Ooh.
But here's why I like him for against the Monstars. He's this big dude, but he like passes the ball from the post. And why is that little dude ping-ponging? All that Steph Curry action with Jokic just throwing. Yeah, I like that. And then, because I think he's going to confuse the hell out of the Monstars or possibly scare them because he looks so weird. Why does that guy's beard look so freaking big? and Harden's my number two. So that's my five. Why is his beard so weird?
I had to go between Harden and Holiday. I mean, Harden's the better player, but on a team to win it all, as we see this in Team USA, I just thought the team construct, I need, you know, Drew Holiday blew me away with his defense this year.
Terrible. Sorry, LeBron, you didn't make my team. I know it sounds terrible, but I just...
I think these last like 2 minutes are just like a pump-up tape for Anthony Davis.
But Henry, we had a the other one, another thing, top three for each position.
Yes,
and he's on my list.
AD is on. See, he's right there. AD is on that list.
Well, I'm sure he's glad to be in your 15, but he would like to be in your 5. You know.
Hey Judy, hey Monstars, this is called 12 o'clock. All right, for Henry Abbott and Coach Thorpe, we will see you guys next week. Have a good weekend, everybody. Stay safe.